Hi there, this is Tracy from NarcissistAbuseSupport.com. I am here with a very special guest today. I love interviewing Dr. Roberta Shaler because she's been doing this for so long and has so much information that she's willing to share with us. Today we're going to talk about a topic that's near and dear to me, and I'm sorry if it is near and dear to you, but it is narcissistic in-laws. We can't pick our in-laws. We fall in love with someone and we get what we get. And technically, it's not always what we see at the beginning. And so today, as we talk about narcissistic in-laws, I want you to think about these behaviors, listen to some of our solutions that are going to guide you as to what to do and how to keep track of this nuttiness. And let's hope that you can move on from this kind of abuse, because you and your partner are going to have to stick up together and unite as a force if you've got narcissistic in-laws. So without any further ado, let's welcome Roberta.
Hi, I'm delighted to be here. And this topic is so juicy.
I know, we are going to be talking about narcissistic in-laws.
Woohoo.
So the way I figure it, I want to start here, is that there are basically three different kind of situations, in my opinion, and I want you to add to it, but that your spouse might not see the abusive parent as an abusive parent because they've lived it their whole life, right? Or that they see it and they can tolerate it, but they keep their distance. You know, they're not going to let them in. Or they don't see it, and they are, then they see it, but they're unable to break free. So they're compliant with them, they don't speak up to them, and they have no power with them. Do you think there's any other kind of situations that I'm missing there?
No, I think you pretty much got that, Tracy, because the thing with a person who has a narcissistic parent, sometimes when they get into a relationship with a romantic partner, that's the first time that they trust somebody else's eyes on the relationship. But the opposite happens. That becomes very divisive when the partner says, you know, don't you think maybe your parents are overstepping? And the child is so used to protecting the parent and parenting the parent that they then cause friction in the relationship, the new romantic relationship. But either way, you know, what I've got for us today are three D's and three C's that are absolutely going to happen when you have narcissistic in-laws, toxic in-laws of any kind. You know, I use the word hijackles, so we don't use psychological terms. But the patterns, traits, and cycles of hijackles fall into narcissistic, psychopathic, sociopathic, any kind of antisocial, borderline, whatever is going on in that world. So they're going to be demanding, dominating, and divisive, right? And they're going to be controlling and critical and cruel.
I like those. I have them listed down, but they're not alphabetical like that. That's so cool.
Well, I think it's important so that we have trigger words. You know, if you are in a relationship with someone that you dearly love, and then you start seeing the frosting come off the cake, you know, the in-laws are beginning to melt into their toxicity, and you have some trigger words like, wow, they're being kind of demanding. It's not an invitation anymore. They're demanding that we show up and at a particular time. And if we don't, blah, 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 blah. Or they're getting in and they want to be dominant. And particularly after you have children, right? We'll tell you how it's going to be. And then they like to be divisive because of their control needs. They like to come between you and your partner. So they'll take you aside and triangulate and say, oh, yes, well, I know that your partner has problems, but we'll take care of you. Or we want you to come along, but we don't want your partner to come. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. And if you understand those things, then you will see just how demanding and divisive and dominant they try to be.
Yeah.
And they could go, oh, that's what that is. And it's a conversation that you could have with your spouse or your live-in romantic partner or whomever. Even it's a conversation that sometimes I encourage siblings to have about their parents. Mm-hmm. Right? And then, of course, the other three just go with the territory. They're controlling and critical and cruel.
Yeah. That is absolutely correct. And you summed it up. It's like all the thousands of words I have written down on a piece of paper here are boom, boom, boom. That is perfect. The behaviors that they have, we have to remember that having a parent, being an adult child of a narcissist, regardless of the spouse coming in yet, that their intent was to control the child, to control the person. And they do this not to necessarily, to rule the roost, but to kind of take them into a place where they are an appendage to them. They live through the child. And so when you come in and they're living through your child, you're a monkey wrench in the whole thing, and they're not going to like it.
Right. And the whole thing about them living through it, let's always remember this in case people haven't heard it in this language. Hijackal, or in this case, narcissistic parents only validate you for making them look good or happy. And so when you go into a relationship with another human that you actually enjoy and you're happy, they want to be the cause of your happiness or your unhappiness. They don't want that other person to be the cause. Mm-hmm. So now there's a competition, right? And that's certainly another good C word that we can add in there. Yeah. Because it's huge. You're absolutely right. They want to be the ones. They want to be the number ones. And you bring that other person in. And even, Tracy, it's so sick that even when grandchildren appear, the same thing happens.
Oh, yeah. I think it gets worse with the grandchildren because you become, as the spouse, even less relevant. And they want to control the way you raise the kids, and they don't go through you anymore. It goes right through to from your spouse to, you know, we're having Thanksgiving, be here at 6, you know, that, and you're bringing this, you know, that they sort of bypass you because now it is about the show of the grandchildren. You know, they have this whole new like mask to show the world what great grandparents they are. And it's like you just get pushed off the edge of the cliff. Okay, but we got your kids. Thanks. Bye.
That's right. And they love to have the grandchildren off by themselves so they can color the grandchildren's view of the world. Another thing you have to watch out for with toxic in-laws.
Yeah, absolutely. I know for me, mine started out so charming. And this is so typical of any narcissistic behavior, but I just thought they were just welcoming me and loving me and showering me with family. But it was really a tactic, and the charm and the over-the-top need to almost interrogate me. They were finding my weaknesses and my strengths in that very beginning stage so that they could create the mask of what I was looking for in a in-law family, and then use it against me, use my weaknesses against me later on. But that intel at the beginning and that charm, but you're like, oh, sure, this is my life, and you're talking, but you're giving them the script of what your weaknesses and strengths are.
Sure. Well, like any narcissist, that's exactly what they're going to do. So they love bomb you, in-laws, partners, bosses. They love bomb you. They listen to you. They're looking for the vulnerabilities. They're looking for the weaknesses, as you say. And then all that is for is just a little bit later to use them. Mm-hmm. And to marginalize you or make you wrong or make you less or whatever. And so this is a strong tactic because they can't validate you for the weaknesses. So therefore you become even more useful to them as a tool to talk about how terrible the situation is and the terrible person that their son or daughter married. But on the other hand, they can exclude you because you are all of these things, and they have a reason to exclude you and to exclude you from interactions. I've had clients, and I have clients all over the world. I've had clients whose in-laws have actually taken the children and then invited their own child to join them and left the spouse out of the equation entirely.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just, okay, well, we want you to come, but, you know, they're very crafty, because manipulation is the top of the list for narcissists, as you so well know. And so they're very crafty. They will craft a scenario, you know, and they will find a way to get those grandchildren off by themselves. I have clients in another country where I work with one set of in-laws, and so we're trying to get some equity because their children married hijackals. They have two children, and both of them married hijackals.
Wow.
And therefore, those spouses have hijackal parents.
Wow.
So I'm happy to say that we've made really great inroads, and now the children actually are left overnight. You know, we have made it to that point. But the things that we've seen over the last 2 years, absolutely classic, and things that you wouldn't believe that another set of in-laws would actually do in this supposedly caring, thinking world where you want family to work.
Absolutely. And you think about, I immediately thought of the War of the Roses, and thinking about the two in-law sets fighting for the children and actually fighting for the couple's time, you know, regardless of the children factor. That happens anyway. But when you are the non-narcissistic in-laws, and you know, you're fighting against a strength that is manipulating, you know, your spouse so much that your parents have to go to the bottom of the list and you don't get to see them. And I can imagine that that would be a very painful situation.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. You know, I had hijackal parents. So absolutely, I'm married a hijackal. And guess what? He had hijackal parents, an overt and a covert narcissist.
Wow.
And it turned out that, and they're both passed on. So, and so is my ex. So I could talk about this freely. She was so covert and so sweet and so humble. And so I don't need anything. While she controlled the whole family. And he was overt. He was a voyeur. He was a predator. He was all kinds of things. And then I show up in this family. So I'm young. I don't know that I was raised by hijackals. He's young. He doesn't know he's raised by hijackals. I am at least in tune with the fact there's something terribly wrong with your parents, because I know there's something wrong with mine. And it ended up that in that relationship, I happened to get pregnant, and we were madly in love. And his parents told him that I had done that on purpose in order to get someone to take care of me, and that he had to leave me. And, you know, kindly enough, he would leave me with the instructions and the money in order to end the pregnancy. But he was to have nothing to do with me because I'd done this on purpose.
Wow. And they convinced him of that.
Oh, absolutely convinced him. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did. And then he circled back round, and I ended up marrying him against my better judgment. But he did, and this is what happens. He went to my godparents and my parents and visited them. Now, he was under psychiatric care at this time, and I was having nothing to do with him. But he went to my godparents, who were very significant in my life, and my parents, visited, brought flowers, said, oh, you know, I love her so much, all of this. And eventually, because he had a cancer diagnosis and, you know, times and everything, I relented. And then I got into that in-law situation from hell, really. So these are the things that happen. And if you had a hijackal parent, you will be very likely to have your first relationship with one, mm-hmm. because it's comfortably uncomfortable and definitely familiar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then just think, you've already had that experience in your home, and now you're going to double the fun, right?
I feel like double mint gum. We double the pleasure, double the fun, get two for one.
Yeah, exactly. And then think about, you know, being quartered, because those are four people drawing you in different directions and your family in different directions.
Absolutely. Sounds like you had like a pretty horrific thing. Did they ever lighten up?
No, actually, my mother-in-law came to me for counseling informally. You know, she'd call all the time, he's doing this, what do I do? And then I'd give advice, and then she'd say I'd tried to ruin the family.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, lovely, really lovely. But it certainly helped me help my clients, because once I decided that I was going to heal all of this, there was no help. Man, this is a long time ago. I started my business in 1984. There wasn't any help. Because why? Hijackals paint public pictures of perfection, and at home they create private places of pain. So you go out in your community to talk to someone, and they know your parents, and they say, oh no, that can't be right. So the in-law thing, they look beautiful on the outside. And then as you get more and more enmeshed in the family, they get awfully ugly.
And they don't like it when they lose control. I mean, it's that moment when they feel like they have lost the control, that they need to squish you down. For me, my in-laws controlled my husband. He lived with them until I married him.
Oh, now big red flag, everybody. Watch for that one.
I'm 40-something years old. Hello.
Oh, yeah.
But he still lives with them now. He went back and lives with them. And again, the fabricated, like, welcoming me always left me with a very bad taste, and all of the persona that they were putting on in front
You're
of
right.
me,
yeah.
It never really made sense. I did welcome them. I felt like I was part of the family, unbeknownst to me, knowing they were stabbing me in the back and calling me a thief and all of the other, you know, smears that they do. But if I look back at the pattern, I had heard tale of a woman that had gotten pregnant by my husband before me, and they didn't approve, and they made her get rid of the baby and break up with him.
There you go. Yeah.
I should have listened. I should have gone, wait a second. They're controlling him and killing his child. You know, they just didn't think she was good enough. And at that same sales point, if you understand that they were selling me going, she wasn't good enough, but you are.
You oh, of course. Are until
I can save him, and I can get him out of our house and free him, when all he really wanted to do was be back in the house so that he didn't have to do anything. As a lazy narcissist, he's got the control of mommy and daddy taking care of everything. You know, it's real easy for him now.
Well, sure. And, you know, as they say, there's nobody who falls in love faster than a narcissist without a job or a home.
Right? Yeah, he had a good job, but he also had a terrible spending habit. He just would buy whatever he wanted, you know, five iPhones in a year. Who buys five iPhones in a year? You know, it was just need, and then always dependent on them as well. So, you know, the in-laws suck you into drama and then blame you for it. Did you have that happen?
Or
have you
absolutely. And they create the drama. It's completely fabricated. There's no need for the drama. But in order to stay in control and to manipulate the situation and feel they have the power, they also construct drama, and they make things up, and they ascribe meaning or motive to the spouse that has nothing to do with the behaviors. And then they speak of them as though they're the truth, and they speak of them not only to their child, but to other people. Mm-hmm. And the smear campaign comes. But, you know, in that speaking to their child, they're triangulating. So they want to say, well, you know, we know you're having difficulties. I mean, after all, look how she behaves. And the child feels like back in the fold and says, oh, well, you know, yeah, it's a little bit hard, so they can get their goodies that they've always longed for from the narcissistic parent who withheld it all this time. But now all of a sudden they're getting what they want. So they feel that, and then they feel pulled. And rightly so, because they know they should be going in your direction, that the construction of the new family requires that you leave the old family to a degree. And then the pull is on, the fight is on, the competition is on. And it can get fierce, absolutely fierce. Now, what you're describing, I mean, look at the level of dysfunction that to return to live with them after they did that tells you all you need to ever know about that family.
Yeah.
They're not happy. They will never, ever, ever be happy. It's impossible for them to be happy because any semblance of being happy is about making other people wrong. And if you live in that energy, you are never content.
No. And nobody will ever be good enough for him. No. You know, which leaves him with a very, very bad thing for his life. Because if he's going to maintain his life with them, or any adult child is going to take sides with their parent over someone, they're cutting their own leg off. They're cutting off the ability to love, because the parents are never going to accept anyone. And when they don't accept them, then you are left alone. Then you're left alone. It's going to be this pattern that repeats itself, because you are trying so desperately to please them that you are willing to kill your baby or divorce your wife just to make mom and dad happy. And I think that's a big problem. I think that,
oh, it's a huge problem. And because they have this need for control, like any narcissist worth being card carrying is going to ruin things. That's one of the ways that they enjoy power. So they'll ruin your holiday. They'll ruin the graduation that you have from your school. They will ruin your birthday. They will ruin holidays of any kind that you have in order to have a sense of control. So when you have toxic in-laws, then you have double down again, because not only does the hijacker want to ruin it, but then you have in-laws who also want to ruin it. And so then the demand comes, you know. We use this acronym FOG, and that's one of the manipulations that narcissists use, and toxic in-laws will use it too. And what FOG stands for is creating fear, obligation, and guilt. So they're wanting to fog you all the time and keep you in that fear, obligation, and guilt. And we know that toxic parents are really good at that before you ever have a spouse. So imagine what happens when their sphere of influence grows and they start doing that to the partner of their child, and then they do that to the grandchildren. And as I was saying, this divisiveness also goes to making differences between grandchildren. You know, I come from a very, very high Jekyll family. My father's family was an absolute case study. Every one of them was high Jekyll. And I remember when my grandmother died, she died after my grandfather, and she was the most miserable human I have ever met in my entire life. I mean, she was miserable. She was unhappy, and she fed that unto everybody to make sure everybody was always kept in a state of confusion and unhappiness. And I had a child before I was married. And so when she decided to write her letters to everybody before she died, I mean, the vitriol that was about my keeping my child, and therefore I had become excluded from the family by doing that. Because it wasn't what the family wanted. And, you know, you look at the things like that and you think, whoa, it had nothing to do with what I wanted or what I felt was right. She felt like she could pontificate and tell the entire family that I was now excluded from the family because I had done this thing.
Wow.
So, you know, when I'm helping people, just like you, you've had this experience. We're coming from knowing how it feels, mm-hmm. right? We empathize because we know how it feels. We've been there. We've done that. We've got the ugly video and the ragged t-shirt. I mean, we've walked through it. And when we get into this exploitation of grandchildren, you know, it's something that we really need to notice because they'll play favorites with the grandchildren. Yeah. And, you know, they'll do nasty things. Like I had one where a grandchild sent a text to the grandmother and the text wasn't responded to. And so the child was a little crushed, but went on. And then a couple of weeks later, the child got a text to say, I forget exactly what it was, a long time ago, but something like, I'm going to take you to Disney World. Yeah, next year. And the child was over the moon and then got a text to say, oh, I'm sorry, I sent it to the wrong grandchild.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That, you know, if you're listening and you're going, oh, who would do that? Toxic narcissistic in-laws will do that because they have to win. They have to be the one that wields the power. And they'll go to any lengths to do that. Sad, unhealthy, dysfunctional, yes, but it happens.
It happens so often. And I think a really important part to know, I mean, we can see some of these behaviors before we marry them, but I would say more times than not, it changes. Like that become, when you get married, that's the narc injury to them. That's the icing on the cake for them. They're like, okay, battle on. You know, they might have picked out your dress and helped you with the wedding and everything was great. But it is that moment where things change. And you might not have had to experience your spouse either standing behind you or abandoning you until that point where they start to change the whole script. They change the way that you interact with your spouse. Yeah. So having a spouse that will stand up to them, will defend you and set some boundaries. We're not going to Thanksgiving if you continue to harass my family or my wife. And so often I see that the narcissistic, the child of the narcissistic parent doesn't have, I'll call it the balls, doesn't have the strength to do that. And so therefore the spouse just gets pushed down and their life is not going to be a good one if you don't have a spouse that's going to stand up for the marriage.
Right. And just a little aside, you can't create that chutzpah. You may want to help your spouse see, but if your spouse will not see, cannot open his or herself to say, I think you're right. You can't create that. So then you have to have boundaries, and you have to have boundaries about the grandchildren. And then you're making your spouse choose. And when you get to that point, it's not going to be pretty.
No.
Then we come to the absolute crux of the matter, that how do we decide to separate this family? And depending on the age and stage of the children, those answers are different. However, you can see that over time, you want to try. You try this, you try that, you say this, you don't say that, you know, absolutely, you have a baby. What could be more validating to a toxic in-law than, look what we produced? You know, you know, now we have this, But then it's like, if I can't have the child when I want the child, if you don't do what I want you to do. Like, I think of a couple that I worked with, and the child, or their child, married a hijackal. And that woman, there, it was their son, she married a hijackal woman, and she got it in her head that a good mother feeds their child a lot. And she force fed both babies until they were like inflatables, right?
Wow.
Yeah. And they tried really everything. Like, I worked with them to make suggestions, you know, to maybe bring over something that was low calorie and tasty, or something to save these children. But the way that the power was exerted was, they're my children and I can do what I want and I'm going to feed them. And my clients told me that they would sit there and watch her stuff the child in the high chair. The food is falling out of the child's mouth, and the child is sort of like entranced in this trauma bond with, okay, in order to make the giant happy, I have to keep eating and it's falling out of my mouth. The child is getting unhealthy. Everybody's watching this. The father of the child can't mention anything, because the mother of the child then says, okay, well, I'll take the children and go home. Mm-hmm. These are the kind of things that are happening in the real world way more often than we ever would want them to happen or hope they happen. They are happening. And if they're happening to you and you're listening to this, I hope that you'll whip off those rose-colored glasses and stop trying to make the red flags into something they're not.
Yeah. So what do they do if they're not getting support from the spouse, and they've got these evil in-laws? It's more than a cliche. It is life-threatening. It is marriage-threatening. What's the best thing to do? Obviously, they can try setting boundaries. What if they don't work?
Well, we all know that hijackals hate boundaries. Mm-hmm. So boundaries are great. So we all want to hope that we, if we're with a hijackal, can set a boundary and hold that boundary. And I don't mean sweeping boundaries. When you are starting to set a boundary, just because it's going to work also with the toxic in-laws, start with small boundaries that may or may not cause a ripple, and then expand them, because you have to, you can't just decide something that's so huge that it's an either or and there's uproar. Start with setting small ones. Then talk to your partner and really talk to them over time and see if they actually see the behaviors as a problem for their marriage and for the children, even if the children don't exist yet. You need to have this conversation. And then once you say, can we set our own family rules about how we're going to do things? Maybe an example of how we choose to spend Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever holiday that you celebrate. How are we going to do it? What's going to be our birthday tradition in our family? And then you start to get in agreement with your partner, and you make agreements as to how you're going to do it, and then what will happen if the in-laws don't wish to participate or they make a fuss. So you have to slowly build the strength into your relationship with their child to see what's possible. Mm-hmm. And then you personally set some small boundaries and ever grow them, and then you see if you can do that with your partner. And if you can get geographical distance, yay. If you get an opportunity to get your dream job in somewhere far away, yay, right? Geographical distance works, and that's an important thing. And if you can, and this again is very difficult, if you can get some agreements and present a united front so that your partner feels shored up and strong, and you present things as a united front. No, we, do this way in our family. We prefer this. No, we're not going to do that. If that we becomes really strong, then you have a hope of creating something where you and your partner are bound more bonded than the child is to their toxic in-law.
Right. I think it's important to lay this out, but as you were saying it, I was like, that's sort of controlling your future, right? And they don't like it when you inflict a boundary or control, right?
So no, that's their job.
Right. But it is, I mean, for me, I was lucky that I did move 2,000 miles away from them. And I think that was probably the best our relationship had ever been until they got him back in their claws and he moved back in their house. But I just see the resistance to setting a strong alliance against them, that it could end up, and I think this has to be discussed with your spouse, it could end up that they have to choose. If they're, the situation is you've laid out these rules and the in-laws don't want to follow them, then what are our choices? What are we going to do in this scenario? How are we going to do it together versus, okay, you go to them for Christmas and I'll see you on Christmas, you know, Eve, instead of separating because of a family like that. I think it's important that you have the backup plan. What if they don't like what we just said? It has to be discussed. You have to have a plan, because if you set up this like beautiful plan, like, hey, this is how we're going to run our life, our holidays, our vacations, our blah, 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 and then they don't, what happens if they don't? This is the part of the puzzle that you have to talk about with your spouse. You have
have to be consequences to breaking the boundaries and the agreements that you've made with your partner.
Right.
And those consequences have to be considerable. You know, when you get into a relationship with somebody who has high Jekyll tendencies or high Jekyll parents, and those two things will usually be the same, and you don't take time. Now, remember, the high Jekyll mentality is to get you as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. So the love bombing, oh, I hardly know you, but I love you. Oh, I just knew when I saw you I was going to marry
my daughter.
Ah, yes, yes. Oh, you're the daughter we've always wanted. I'm so glad our son brought you home. And all of that kind of thing that's going on. And you are longing for that because maybe you didn't have that in your family. So you are just like, oh, I've died and gone to heaven. This is perfect. I found my soulmate and the ideal family. Just know that's natural. That's you wanting to be affirmed, wanting to be included, wanting to feel like you belong. But once you realize that that is not the real picture, that facade has been snapped away, it's really hard, but you need to get some help in order to get some distance, some emotional distance from what's going on.
Absolutely. That's a very good point. Getting some counseling, getting some coaching, getting someone that is going to give you that non-biased opinion, because your spouse is emotionally attached to their parents. So you need someone that's going to help ground you to the reality of what's really going on, because you need an ally.
Yeah. And you're the new person on the block. Mm-hmm. So that child of those parents, they were born into it. This is comfortably uncomfortable to them. They accepted this way of being before they had language, because of the way the brain develops, the way that the whole thing happens for us. It happens in the first 24 months of our lives, and it's reinforced from then on in many, many cases. Occasionally it's something traumatic later, but that's the way it goes in a high Jekyll family. So this person, you know, has always been in this hot water situation. That's all they know is, you know, walking on eggshells and dancing in hot water.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you show up and you say, it looks to me like you're dancing on eggshells and, you know, what's going on? They want to defend because they think it's something wrong with them that they haven't seen it. So, you know, when you talk about double whammy, you can have three or four or five or six different things that are weighing down this relationship. And so if you become the excluded one, if your partner goes back and sides with the parent, you have a whole other direction that you need that support with, because you're feeling you want to be validated for your point of view, your perspective, but also your feelings are, I am now, if I believe this, I am excluding myself from what I thought I was getting. So it's very, very divisive. And that's what I meant in one of the ways of talking about these people being divisive. They cause divides in you, you know, places where you get wrenched in half. They divide families, they divide grandchildren, they divide time. They want to come between you and your partner. They want to come between you and your children, and they will do anything to win. Remember, the number one hallmark of a hijackal is the need to win in every discrete moment.
Yeah.
They want to win overall, but they've got to win now and now and now. And so if they need to win and say something on this day, and they need to win the next day, and they say the opposite, and you say, but yesterday you said that, they will say to you, oh, well, there you go. You just don't listen, do you? No. You just don't understand how this family works.
I know there's so much gaslighting that can go on with that. And you know, yeah, using, again, those strengths against you, and that divisiveness to make you think you're crazy, to make your spouse think you're crazy, because that's what their goal is. If they can tell them all these bad things about you, then the spouse is going to go, oh, maybe you're right. Maybe that wasn't good, that she didn't like that or whatever. It is a manipulation tactic from day one. And anybody that is in this sort of situation, we are saying, go get some help, get some reinforcements. Yeah. Your friends and your family might not know how to help you. And so make sure that you are getting and talking to a professional that understands not only narcissistic or hijackal behaviors, but just understands the place of dealing with this with your spouse, because together you have to become allies, and you might need to do some work together as well.
Yes, and that would be ideal if your spouse was willing to do some work with you. You know, many times a couple will come in to talk, and it's the first time that child of those parents has had a place of safety to talk about what they really feel. Mm-hmm. And it takes a while for them to feel safe, and a while for them to know that, you know, it's not going to go beyond these walls, and it's not going to be used against you, and all of that, so that they can let down. Because children of narcissistic, toxic parents never have let down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're always on edge, waiting to be hurt, waiting to please, waiting to see what's going to happen, waiting to see how the wind is blowing and where the tide's turning. And you need to find some safety. But if you've married into this, first of all, do your own work, because there was something very compelling and attractive about this. No fault there. It was compelling. But once you sort of wake up and smell the herbal tea, like, this is not good, then you may need a better perspective. And that's what you'll get when you go to a professional. And here's why your friends can't help you in that way. They're on your side. And so they don't have the tools, of course, to help you. They're not trained to help you. But they want to support you in the ain't it awful and he or she is doing you wrong. But they don't know how to help. So you just get a whole lot of reinforcement for it's awful, and then there you are sitting in it's awful.
I know. Yeah, you tend to get stuck there, and well-meaning as they might be,
and necessary,
your job is to like rally the troops and go, oh, that is mean, oh, yeah. And where does that get you? You just live, like you said, you live in the hurt and the anger and confusion.
And you keep telling the story over and over. And here's why that's not a good idea. I tell my clients, you tell me your story. You have to tell me your story in detail. And then make a promise that the entire time we're working together, you never tell anyone else your story. And they're like, what? I said, no, because every time you retell your story, you're rewounding yourself on the cellular level. We're working to heal, and you're working against the healing by retelling your story. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going wrong, Tracy, just to have a little moment of rant, in a lot of the groups that you find on social media.
I know.
Is that it's rant, rewound. So the person who's posting that this happened is just looking for validation. And of course, that's appropriate. But the people who are reading it are constantly staying in the problem. So when you are in a group like that and you realize you want help, not just affirmation, think about moving on. Don't stay there and keep hearing that. Don't get engaged in, oh, well, I can help you, when you are still unhealed, right? That's not appropriate. Right. I have groups on Facebook. I move them to my membership site completely off social media. Very inexpensive. $5 a month to start off social media so that you can have direct input from me. And write, you know, it works just like Facebook. It's on my website. But if you get stuck in the ain't it awful and he or she done me wrong conversation for months and months and months and months and months and months on Facebook, you're not going to feel a moment better.
No.
In the beginning, it's great. Oh, there are other people like me because you've been isolated. Mm-hmm. And that's wonderful. But, you know, if you're belonging to Tracy's group, you're going to get insights. You're going to get information. You're going to have, well, here's what's really going on and here's what you can do about it. That's what we need, yeah. Not just a pity party.
I know. And I have a Facebook group, as you know, and it is that initial validation. And I tell my local support groups that I talk in front of every month that we don't want to live there. We need that validation to understand we're not alone, but repeating the stories for 2 years is not making you heal. And a lot of people think that it's almost like, you know, oh, I learned the lesson because I did it 84 times. No, you just kept doing it over and over and you got really good at whatever it was that sucked, but you didn't learn a lesson because you did it 84 times. If you did it twice, you would have learned the lesson and never done it again. So they think by repeating it, and that's very much what happens on a hamster wheel of a support group, right? That is just, you know, hundreds of people coming in on a monthly basis that are wounded, and they need that. I think it's safe.
Yeah, in the beginning. Absolutely.
You have to go, all right, now what do I do? How do I heal? What book should I read? Where should I go? You know, instead of rehashing the old wah, 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 you know, it doesn't help you. You have to look to the future. And when we are dealing with someone with narcissistic in-laws, they have to figure this out, and they have to figure it out pretty fast, because if you don't, you will have a lifetime of hell, not being supported and having your children pitted against you. It's just not pretty. So
no, it's not pretty at all. And you don't have to wait for a divorce for alienation to start occurring, because the toxic in-laws will start the alienation process while you're still married to their child. And so that whole need to win shows up then. And, you know, I want to add something to the wise words that you just shared, Tracy, which is, you know, we don't want to keep going and being rewounded. You tell your story once or twice and then, you know, move on. And once you've had the affirmation and validation that you're not alone and this does indeed happen. But on the grander scale, use that same wisdom to realize if somebody, particularly your spouse, tells you that they acknowledge they did something that was inappropriate or hurtful or disrespectful, and they say their story and they apologize, that the only apology that matters is that they don't do it again.
Right.
And so if we have to start at that level of just simply saying, how is my spouse responding when I say, I don't like this, and here's what I'd prefer, and they say, okay, I see that, I'm sorry, we'll do that, and then they don't change. Start there. Start realizing that if that's the case, and then it's going to extrapolate out, so how do they interact with their parents? How do they interact with their siblings? How do they interact at work? Do they come home and tell me about all the terrible things that happen at work and it's always someone else's fault? Start looking at the patterns. Yeah. Early on, you know, whip off those rose-colored glasses, even though you'd love to believe that love is in your future, and see it, because if you don't, it's going to be such a long journey of pain. Yeah. And so if you have a prospective in-law who gets the tiniest bit competitive, notice. Right? Notice that. If you have an in-law that says, oh, but we were planning that event, and, you know, oh, notice, right? Mm-hmm. Notice what people do to emotionally manipulate you, and allow yourself to trust your gut. You felt that. And much as you'd like to justify it or rationalize it or make an excuse for it, don't. Notice it. And you will get yourself into fewer difficult situations if you learn to believe that you feel what's going on correctly in your body.
I have only one thing to add to that very eloquent finale here, is that as you notice them, write them down. Just keep a journal for yourself and hold on to that, because, you know, as the time evolves and time goes by, we forget that last Christmas they did the same shit. It happens and you go, oh gosh, they're doing the same stuff. You know, you have to have some reference point, because there could be millions of them.
Yeah.
But when you start to add them up on a spreadsheet, on a journal, that's where you get the validation. You won't need the Facebook group as much when you've got this, you know, I've got the proof here. Oh my goodness, how could I have not seen this sooner? If you're noting it and not writing it down, those things get forgotten. And the love bombing happens and you forgive them and life goes on and then they do it again. Mm. Write it down. Even write down the parts about them love bombing you afterwards. You know, this is what happened and then this happened. Remember that. That's a pattern you have to keep track of. If you don't,
you're yeah, and keep track of it somewhere it's not going to be found by your partner.
Exactly. Isn't that what Google Cloud is for? Create.
As long as the account is in your name and only you have the password, and it's not a password that anybody else could figure out. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right.
It's so important, as Tracy's saying, to document. Because what we're doing is upgrading the documentation to include the entire family. You know, when you are with a narcissist and things start to go sideways and things start to be wrenching, document all of that in the primary relationship, because you're going to see patterns, as Tracy was saying, but you're also going to need that history to serve you very well if you have to go to court. But then start documenting the family patterns so that you can see, okay, this is bigger than me. It's bigger than my partner and I. I've tried these things. I've tried to create a unified front with my partner. I've tried setting boundaries with the in-laws. We've tried setting boundaries as a couple with the in-laws, maybe not. We've made agreements and they've been broken. And if these things are documented, then you don't think you're going crazy.
Exactly.
And that's what they want. their behaviors are crazy making, and they want to gaslight you to the point where you think it's your fault. You're not seeing it correctly. You're misreading their intentions. That's what they'll tell you anyway. But when you've wisely done what Tracy said and you've documented them, but it happened this time and this time and this time. So I have to believe the pattern. And don't be afraid to open your eyes and see someone else's behavior without any kind of rushing to justify the behavior. See behavior clearly for what it is and how it affected you. How it affected you doesn't mean that the behavior was intended that way, but you are in a relationship. So you need that if you're going to have conversations with your partner about how you feel, how you'd like to be treated, what would work, and begin to negotiate those boundaries and agreements with your partner. And as you do that, you will see whether that's possible, and that will inform you as to whether or not it's possible with your partner's parents.
Well, I can't thank you enough. I love talking with you. We could talk all day. In fact, we've done these sort of night meetings, just the two of us, and we talk for 2 or 3 hours. We're like, oh my God, where did the time go? So we are blessed to have you here. Thank you for being on my channel. People can reach you how? And I know you've got a podcast. You want to talk about that for a second?
Sure. You can reach me at transformingrelationship.com. And my podcast, I have two of them. One's called Emotional Savvy, the Relationship Help Show. And the other one, especially on the topics we're talking about today, is called Save Your Sanity, Help for Toxic Relationships. And they're both available wherever you like to get your podcasts. But if you want to come over to my website, just click on podcasts at transformingrelationship.com. Also, just like Tracy, I have a large YouTube channel. Yeah. And that's called For Relationship Help, F-O-R, Relationship, H-E-L-P.
Thank you again so much for joining me, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you.